Hello and welcome under the Kotatsu. I'm your host Austin, joined as always by Danny.
Sorry.
Sleepy Danny.
It caught me mid-yawn. Hello.
And Danielle.
Hey nerds.
And we are here for a special one-off in between picks. We're watching some Dragon Ball. But before we get into any of that, go around the table, see what everybody's drinking. I feel like I rarely start with myself, so I will start and say I'm drinking some hot tea on this nice cold spring day that we're having. That some of us are not fortunate enough to be having. Danielle, what are you drinking?
I've got a smoothie. That is my lunch. Mm. And black coffee. Just like some berry and greens mix that was pre-frozen. And oat milk.
Ooh. Danny, what about you?
I'm just having some lemonade.
Is it anything special? If you had a special lemonade recently, what am I remembering that you had? Or am I just out of pocket? What am I thinking of, Danny?
I don't know what you're thinking of, but I do sometimes have special lemonades, so...
Mm. But not a special lemonade, just a normal lemonade?
No, just a normal lemonade today.
So you're having lemonade, but not lemonade Z or lemonade GT or
unfortunately.
Lemonade Super.
After finding out what happens at the end of lemonade GT, I'm unfortunately not having lemonade GT. Mm.
But yeah, we're here to talk about some Dragon Ball. So we figured we would watch one of the movies, you know, to honor the man himself, Akira Toriyama, who passed away recently. Which I believe we talked about around the time that happened. So RIP, and rather than watching, oh God, how many episodes is Z? I was looking at this earlier, but I don't remember. I have another episode number in mind. It's like 300 or something like that. It's ridiculous. I'm navigating to it if you give me a moment. 291. So rather than watch 291 episodes of Dragon Ball Z or like 153 episodes of Dragon Ball, we opted to watch the first Dragon Ball Z movie, which in English is called Dragon Ball Z Dead Zone, like the Stephen King novel. Or in Japanese, it's something like Son Gohan is missing or something like that. Because that's the plot of the movie. He gets kidnapped. Something I didn't realize when I was like, oh, we should watch the first one because I remember this one being one of the better ones. It's also like the shortest Dragon Ball Z movie. This movie's like 40 minutes long, which I'm not going to lie, that was pretty awesome. So I've seen this before. Have either of y'all seen this one before?
No.
No, but I knew generally what happened through playing 5 billion Dragon Ball games as a kid.
I will say, by the way, the Japanese title for this is Dragon Ball Z, Return My Gohan!
Mm.
Return him now.
Give him back.
Chala, headshala.
Exactly. we'll get into some chala, headshala in a second. But I'd definitely seen this movie at some point on TV as a kid, and then because I'd seen all of them. And then recently I'd rewatched DBZ for All Systems Goku, which is like a Giant Bomb podcast where they watch Dragon Ball Z Kai. So I watched that a couple years back. And when I finished that, I was like, you know, I'm craving more Dragon Ball, but I don't want to watch like 150 episodes of Dragon Ball or however many episodes of GT that's like 60 or 70. So I was going through the movies. I stopped at a certain point, probably around like the second cooler movie. Maybe I was like, you know what? I think I've had my fill. But I remember watching the first couple and being like, oh, this is the shit. Mostly just because like early on Dragon Ball Z, early Dragon Ball Z and then late Dragon Ball Z when it starts to be more comedic again, is some of the best stuff, like the Saiyan saga early on. And then I really like the Frieza saga up until the very end, which that stuff's still fine, but like the early goings of that is cool. But this reminds me a lot of early DBZ, these first few movies, but especially Dead Zone, which I think by the time this came out, like DBZ was like brand new. So this movie's like supposed to be set before any of the stuff that happens at the beginning of Z has happened. So it's very much feels like a in between of the tones of like DB and DBZ.
Yeah, I had to like kind of mentally recheck myself of like, all right, you know, Piccolo is still a bad guy at this point, or at least an enemy of Goku. Vegeta is nowhere to be seen. I think he comes in like later Dragon Ball, not later Dragon Ball Z, but like
he's very early. But this is like how early this is set in the timeline of Z that Vegeta's not even like a thing yet.
Yeah, so that was kind of an interesting thing. Like, oh, what's going on in the universe by the time we start here, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And then I assume we all have fairly similar histories with Dragon Ball in that watched it a lot on like Toonami and Cartoon Network and whatnot as a kid because it's just kind of like impossible to escape.
Yeah.
that and playing the Budokai and then Budokai Tenkaichi and then probably other stuff in there too.
Yeah, I played quite a bit of the Arxis fighting game. What was that one called? Dragon Ball FighterZ?
Yeah.
I played quite a bit of that. And I played a bunch of the Budokai and all those games that vary wildly in quality over the years. I've never read much of the manga. I tried to read original Dragon Ball probably around the time I was watching Z Kai so a few years back, but didn't make it very far. But I would like to at some point actually read through all of Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I did the same thing trying to read the original, but I wanted to fucking kill Roshi in that, unsurprisingly.
Well, some context around this movie then. So like I said, it came out like very early on in the run of Z. July 15th, 1989 was the premiere date. It premiered in a Toei film festival called the Toei Manga Matsuri, which featured four movies. I couldn't find anywhere, like, if you had gone to this, like, what order they would have aired in, and I would be very curious to know, just because I feel like the vibe of the Toei Manga Matsuri Festival definitely would be dependent on the order in which you watch these movies. It was this movie, Dragon Ball Z Dead Zone. It was Mobile Cop Jibon the Movie, which is a Metal Hero show in, you know, the series that Jam Person belongs to, called The Movie, but it's like 24 minutes long. It's like basically just an episode of Jibon, but with slightly higher production value. And then Akuma-kun, the movie, from like the 80s adaptation of that. And then, because Akuma-kun's like an older manga from the guy that wrote, he also wrote Gegege no Kitaro. But the thing I feel like a lot of people in English fandom would know is he wrote that manga series about like World War II. What's it called? It's like Showa, a History of Japan. He wrote that, which is like based on a lot of his real life experiences. Like, dude lost his arm in the war. Like, read my guy's Wikipedia page for just like a wild personal biography. That author led an interesting life, but that's the Akuma-kun guy. And then the fourth movie was an Akko-chan movie from the 1980s adaptation of that manga, specifically the second movie from that anime adaptation, with like the subtitle The Ocean, The Curse, and The Summer Festival. And I watched all of these just for funsies, and we can get into some of the non-Dragon Ball ones later. But what did y'all do? Because I shared all this with y'all and kind of let y'all decide if you wanted to watch any of it or not.
I watched Dragon Ball first alone, okay. And then I watched the other three back to back to back because I was like, oh shit, podcast is tomorrow. I watched Akuma, Akko, and then Jibon. I think I chose an incorrect watch order for myself.
I'm curious what you mean by that, but we'll have to save that for later. I, for the record, watched Dragon Ball first, obviously, because that was the assignment, and then Jibon, Akko-chan, and then Akuma-kun.
I did Dragon Ball, Jibon, Akuma, Akko, because I didn't have Akko on my in my files yet. I started it up, I was like, wait, why is it like so choppy? Oh, I don't have it. It's fully downloaded. Oops.
But yeah, it's a very, very interesting snapshot of what was going on in 80s kids media produced by Toei.
It was interesting because I thought that I only just now realized when you said it, like, I thought all of these were done by Toriyama. I was like, oh, that's like a weird or cool that it's like such a connective thread, but no, it's completely unrelated things just happen. I mean, other than them being at Toei.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I looked at the other Dragon Ball movies to see if they were released in a similar, like, set of sort of festival lineup, and I think maybe one of them was, but not, like, a reoccurring thing. They weren't doing the Toei Manga Matsuri Festival every year. But then some more backstory about this specific Dragon Ball movie. So directed by Daisuke Nishio, who is, like, the director for Dragon Ball at this time. He directed the last, like, 70 episodes of Dragon Ball. The Dragon Ball anime, which is like the last three big arcs. So the Tien Shinhan saga, the King Piccolo saga, and the Piccolo Jr. saga. And then directed the first 199 episodes of Dragon Ball Z. So that's everything up to the Great Saiyaman saga. So basically he wrapped up after the Cell games. And then directed this movie, The World's Strongest and The Tree of Might, which are the second and third Dragon Ball Z movies. Return of Cooler, which is the sixth DBZ film, and obviously from the title, the second film with Cooler. who is Frieza's brother. And then he also did direct the first two out of four original Dragon Ball movies. So those are Curse of the Blood Rupees and Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle. And then on top of all the Dragon Ball stuff, also really well known for being the director on the very first Precure series, Futari wa Precure, and its sequel, Futari wa Precure Max Heart. And then other fun thing that he directed. Have y'all seen Halo Legends before?
I don't think so.
It's kind of like a Animatrix, but for Halo. It's like a bunch of segments directed by different studios set in like the world of Halo. He directed with Toei Animation the last segment, which is Odd One Out, which is a parody of Halo, and it's basically what if Halo was Dragon Ball? What if Halo was a power level shonen battle series? Like, what if Master Chief punched dinosaurs?
Oh my god,
it's pretty cool. In the realm of the few Halo things that are cool, that one segment in Halo Legends is pretty cool. But he directed that. I think that's all the lead in I have. Do you have anything? I guess we want to do a vibe check on this. My vibes are it's good. This is the platonic ideal of an anime movie.
So wait, are we asking for a vibe check of just Dragon Ball or of all of the...
Just Dragon Ball. We can get into the later stuff after we talk through the Dead Zone.
Yeah, I'll give Dead Zone a good old thumbs up. I had a time with it. I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm glad that I realized that the Japanese audio track had songs in it. Like verbal songs, because otherwise I would have been incredibly bored for a few minutes at a time. But yeah, no, it was a good time.
Yeah, generally positive. I don't really know. I said generally, like, it's positive, but not like, oh my god, this is incredible.
Yeah, it's not like the most life changing thing you'll ever seen. But I'll summarize my notes that I have after I finished watching it or rewatching it, which is like. Literally the ideal, like, there's a couple, like, different archetypes for, like, anime film based on a anime series, and this is just, like, this is what I want, which is, it's 40 minutes long, it's basically just, like, a condensed version of what could be, like, a multi-episode arc, or just a long version of, like, a one-off episode. All your boys are here, fucking Piccolo's here, Goku's here, Gohan's here, the gang's all here. It's got better production than you'd get from the TV anime, and, like I said, it's 40 minutes long, like you're in and you're out. Fucking perfect. No notes.
I got a kick out of that where Garlic Jr. gets done in what probably takes a whole season of Dragon Ball Z. He gets done in about 5 minutes. He just gets all the Dragon Balls right there.
But let me summarize it, I guess. I didn't write a description because I figured this would be extremely easy to summarize. But everyone's just vibing. Goku's like naked fishing for giant fish. Chi-Chi's like doing laundry. And then a bunch of Namekian weirdo goons show up. They kidnap Gohan because he's got a Dragon Ball. Turns out they're getting the seven Dragon Balls together for a guy named Garlic Jr., son of Garlic Sr., who was an evil guy that got imprisoned into, I don't think they say the Dead Zone, but you know, you can see the parallel that's about to happen later in the movie. He wishes for specifically to live forever, like for immortality. It's like, that seems like a monkey's paw wish waiting to happen, but all right, my dude. Goku shows up. It's like, hey, give me back my Gohan. Hey, wait, that's the title of the movie. And then a bunch of fights happen. Piccolo shows up. He kind of died at the beginning of the movie, but turned out didn't actually die because Piccolo's too cool for that. They beat the shit out of all of Garlic Jr.'s goons. And then Garlic Jr. is going to open up a portal into the Dead Zone where everyone will die. But Gohan, with his Saiyan child powers, I thought he turned into a big monkey at the end of this. He doesn't. He does that in the anime. But he overpowers Garlic Jr. enough for Garlic Jr. to get sucked into his own portal to the Dead Zone. And now he's immortal, forever imprisoned in the Dead Zone, like Zod from Superman.
Or the movie. Or Lord Kars in JoJo's.
Oh, yeah, in JoJo's. Yep. Definitely a classic ironic fate to happen to imposing bad guy. And also at some point in the movie, Gohan like eats a Namekian apple and gets drunk and pees on Krillin.
I was about to say, gets an insert song.
Yep.
I was gonna say you forgot to mention Krillin gets pissed on. That was critical.
Yeah, plot critical. pissing. I feel like Krillin like tastes it, like he gets in his mouth and he's like, what's this? Ah, it's piss.
It's piss.
Also, Kami's there. Kami, the like other half of Piccolo. He's there. He turns gold. Fights Garlic Jr. Also gives us the backstory on Garlic Sr.
He was about to turn into Predator and blow himself up, but then Garlic Jr.'s like, yeah, no, I'm literally immortal. It's not going to do anything. And then Piccolo's like, oh, you're immortal? Well, that means I'm going to make it so that you can't do anything for all eternity. What a life you've chosen for yourself. And I'm like, yeah, get him.
Mm-hmm. I love that Goku's such a great character. And I love that, like, the kind of undercurrent to, like, the Goku Garlic Jr. stuff in this is like, hey, you cheated to get your power. Like, you got to train to get that, my guy. Like, you got to do your reps. Go to the gym. You deserve to be in the dead zone.
Well, what's funny is, like, he's, like, this little guy, and you wouldn't think he's strong, but, like, he only wished for immortality. He didn't wish for, like, all this power, so he must have actually had the power to, like, raise the souls of the damned and open a portal to the dead zone. He already had that in his back pocket. He just wanted to live longer.
Yeah, he's like, what if I summon the demon army, but then Goku punches me real hard, and I die? Gotta make sure that that doesn't happen.
Exactly. And then he gets buff.
Yeah, then he gets swole. I like halfway through the movie, I was like, you know what? I think my only complaint about this is that like Garlic Jr. is like a loser, and then he gets swole, and I'm like, never mind. Perfect movie. We're good.
I mean, like, my complaint was like rewatching this, going the oh yeah, like so much of Dragon Ball Z is about how Gohan's like stronger than Goku. What the fuck happens in Super?
I genuinely have no idea what happens in Super.
Yeah, like I don't know either, but it's like, where the fuck is Gohan in Super?
I have heard that large chunks of Super are basically just like a hangout show with all your favorite Dragon Ball guys, and also they introduce a bunch of new guys that people like, and that sounds alright to me.
Two new types of Goku.
Yeah,
right? You get blue and red.
Yeah, sure. There's because there's Super Saiyan God, and then there's Goku Black, who's got pink hair. When he goes Super Saiyan God, I don't know. The only knowledge I've absorbed from Super is from that arc system works of fighting game. So.
I think Goku Black is, like, from the games, specifically?
No, he's definitely in the anime. I've definitely seen...
Okay.
And also, the kids are wearing t-shirts with Goku Black on it. The youth are all over Goku Black, and that wouldn't be the case if it was just in the Arc System game. The kids are not into the Arc System games, but they're into anime.
Isn't the whole, like, Super Saiyan Man arc about Gohan being, like, a loser? And like
No, it's about Gohan being, like, a tokusatsu hero.
Yeah, but
called
like
the Great Saiyan Man.
He's like just beating up thugs. Like he's not doing anything really all that interesting. Like he has all all this power in theory, and he's just like, I'm gonna stop this perch snatcher or whatever.
It's more than Goku can do for most of his time.
Well, then like Cell shows up and starts doing like that's the Saiyan Man stuff leads in, or no, that's after Cell.
That's
right before the Boo stuff. Yeah, they do like another world tournament, which I think he fights in as Great Saiyan Man. Anyway, love Great Saiyan Man. Not a loser, for the record.
Not a loser.
Speaking of not losers and things that go hard, the beginning of this movie fucking whips. Like, opens on Piccolo yelling. Very
Yeah, my first note is, ah!
Piccolo, one of the coolest guys in anime ever.
Yes.
Especially when he wears that one, in that one episode where he has the really good fit and goes to, like, driving school with Goku.
And I did not realize that Piccolo is voiced by Chris Sabat,
yes.
Who is also Vegeta.
Mm-hmm.
Did not realize that there is a shared blood there.
Well, only one guy in the Funimation pool of voice actors who's hard enough to go to the paint for both Piccolo and Vegeta. But yeah, so I guess a question then is what version of this movie did y'all watch? Because there are several in terms of the audio.
I think it was the newer English dub. I think.
I think same.
I feel like you would know if you watched the older dub, which is the Ocean dub, because you'd be like, wow, none of these guys sound like how they're supposed to. Yeah, there's the Ocean dub, which not very good IMO. And then the Funimation dub, which they redubbed these movies in the early 2000s when they re-released them on DVD. And then there's obviously the Japanese. And then the first... The original English dub has like redone music, like they rescored the music for some reason. and then when Funimation redubbed it, they released their dub with both versions of the music so that you can pick. And obviously the Japanese music is better. But you also, you got to do what I guess me and Danny, I know you did as well, switch to the Japanese audio just for the opening of this movie so you can hear Chala Hedgela.
Yeah.
Which is the first Dragon Ball Z opening theme, which is all-time great anime banger. I'm pretty sure we talked about it when it came up in Lucky Star, because What's-Her-Face does karaoke to Chala Hedgela, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta hit that switch audio track button just for the minute and a half.
It's very funny because it's a mono audio track versus like the surround sound, like HD audio track. It switches back to the Japanese like 89 mono track, but you're still like, yeah, fuck yeah. I mean, if it's either that or you listen to generic instrumental copyright free shit or whatever for 5 minutes.
Which I shit you not is like what Funimation used as the replacement for Chala Hedgela for the actual like anime, like the TV anime. So imagine you're watching like however many like 50 episodes of Dragon Ball before they change OPs, and you've just got to listen to like noodly guitar music at the beginning of every episode instead of Chala Hedgela. And then you know the movie kind of kicks into gear. We get the like, I think, so I really like the production on this movie. I think it looks great. I especially love the design and the way the three like Namekian goons are animated in this. I think they're all great. It's like the scene where they come up and steal Gohan. Very good. I don't know, thoughts on these weirdos. I like the one guy that like puts like five apples in his mouth and eats them all at once.
I like how they have stupid catchphrases for no reason.
I like their names being Gingerbread, Tutti Frutti, and Cheese.
Oh, those aren't their names. That's like the catchphrases.
Oh, I just assumed that they were saying their names.
Now there's Ginger, Nikki, and Sancho.
Oh.
They're like spices and seasonings.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's I assume that they were doing that. They were just saying their names to buff up or whatever. I thought they were super generic. I don't know, like,
oh, they're very generic, but I like just they're weird looking dudes and like that's all they're there for. But I think they're fun for like a 40-minute movie. They're like as like, you know, as much of characters as they need to be.
Yeah,
but I think they look very cool. But yeah, it kind of just like gets right into the plot. You know, they steal Gohan. They take him to Garlic Jr.'s like sick demon castle in the sky.
So there's like no indication of how far away or where that is. I mean, it's presumably far away, but no, I just love like there being just, oh, there's old Garlic's demon castle in the mountains over there or whatever. I also forgot that Ox King was like Chi-Chi's dad, I guess.
Yep.
I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Why is he wearing that wild hat? And then I heard someone say Ox King. I was like, oh, okay, like that's why he has that.
This is the appeal of Dragon Ball, is everybody's just like a unique kind of guy, you know. Just like, oh yeah, there's the Ox King. This is like way too early for him, but like, you know, like characters like Mr. Satan are just like, wow, what a singularly weird kind of guy. But yeah, he's Chi-Chi's dad. And then it's very quick to like Garlic Jr. getting all the Dragon Balls. He's got like three when they bring in Gohan, so that brings him up to four, and then suddenly it's just like, all right, and then I've got the rest of them now, time to summon Shenlong.
Yeah, it's like on the way to, for Goku, on his way to his castle, he's like, oh, I'm gonna borrow the dragon radar because like I see that they have the, like, they already have these balls together, so that's where they are. So he's on the way there, and then like next thing we see is him making the wish, and like the ball flies by Goku's head, and he's like, oh damn, they must have already summon the dragon or whatever. It's like, yeah, no, like, good job, Goku.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I don't remember. Can he fly or does he have to use the Nimbus?
He has to use the Nimbus.
Okay. Because they changed that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, eventually he can just teleport, I guess, but...
Yeah, instant transmission.
Mm.
It's when he comes back after the Frieza saga. He's like, hey guys, I'm back and I learned this neat new trick.
He'll never guess how much production costs this cuts down on. Oh, I mean.
But yeah, Shenlong looking cool as shit, as always. I love that he's just like impossibly long, just like loops around himself.
I like that with like you had mentioned the monkey paw thing. Like, he's not like a genie or like a monkey paw character where he's like oh, I'm going to twist your desire against you kind of thing. He's going to give you exactly what you want. You just have to not be dumb as shit when you're or doing that.
Yeah, wish for something better than simply, I want to live forever.
Yeah. If you're going to do that, just be like, I want to be omnipotent or something. Like, come on.
Yeah. At some point, we get the Garlic Jr. backstory, or Garlic's dad backstory, which is like, ah, my dad was an evil guy, and then he was defeated, and now I'm going to get revenge. But we get some sick animation during the backstory of, like, his dad summoning the demon army and all this stuff, which is very good. Those sequences in the movie where, like, the animation style is, like, completely different are some of the parts that really stand out the most to me.
I just love that both he and his dad are like, it's not like, oh, I'm gonna do this thing that the main characters think are evil, but like I have my own reasoning for whatever. No, mm-hmm. He's like outright like, my reign of terror is going to last eternity. It's like, oh, okay, dude.
Yeah, he's basically just trying to usher in like the end of a Devilman Crybaby. It's like, and then the demons will consume the earth.
Yeah, we don't see Garlic Sr., though. Kami is like your father is enacting his 300-year revenge through his son or whatever. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know off the top of my head of like if Garlic Sr. was like a character in original Dragon Ball at all. Like if this is supposed to be like a, oh, this is the son of that guy we knew. I've seen most of original Dragon Ball, I think, but it's been even longer than a lot of the other Dragon Ball stuff, so I don't remember.
On the list of Dragon Ball characters, Garlic Jr. is listed, Garlic Sr. is not.
Mm.
Garlic Jr. also comes back. Somehow, Garlic Jr. has returned.
Well, so the other thing we probably should have said a lot earlier about the movies, all the Dragon Ball movies, is none of them are canonical with the TV series or the manga, like explicitly. I don't know what in this movie specifically, but all of the movies have like specific things that they put in there that directly contradicts the anime, like on purpose to let you know like, hey, this is like, we're fucking around, we're having fun, this is a movie, none of this matters to what's going on Saturday mornings when you watch the cartoon or whatever. So when the Garlic Jr. arc happens in the show, I don't think any of that is like any of what happens in this movie gets called back to. But I definitely don't remember that because last time I watched Dragon Ball Z was Kai, where they cut that out completely because they cut out all the filler.
Yeah, which I've never seen Kai, but if I'm going to watch a Dragon Ball Z series or Dragon Ball series generally, I'm going to watch the Kai version, cut all the fat out.
It's not perfect. I want to say, especially like the back half of Kai has some aspect ratio fuckery that sucks.
And don't we like lose out on shit like Goku getting his driving license?
Yeah, because they cut out all the filler. Dragon Ball Z Kai is literally just like only keeps stuff that happened in the manga. So it's way more condensed, but you lose some of the more fun one-off bits that are in the original TV series. Although someone's probably made a list of like, here's all the filler episodes you should go back and watch. That end, some of the like openings and endings are redone, and some of them are good redone versions, some of them are bad. There's like, you know, mixed bag, but that probably the ideal way to watch it if you've already seen Dragon Ball Z before and want to just revisit it, like for sure. But yeah, so none of what happens in this is like canon with that, if that matters. And then eventually like all the heroes show up to the demon castle. Goku and Krillin pops in. It's like, hey, it's me, Krillin. I'm not gonna do anything in this movie except for get pissed on and chase Gohan around.
I had a note that was like, oh, that, and that's the last we saw of Krillin, and then he comes back later. I'm like, oh, Krillin's here, and then he gets pissed on. I'm like, oh, Krillin got pissed on.
And then Piccolo shows up. Turns out he's alive. He didn't actually die in the opening minute of the movie. Surprise. I fucking love Piccolo. I wrote in my notes, Piccolo is my anime dad. I feel like I was raised by Piccolo. he's a father to me. Much like he is to Gohan. And this is like a cool, like you said at the top of the day, like he's not like evil still like he is at the end of Dragon Ball, but he's not like one of the guys yet, you know. He's like reluctant to be here, and by the end of the movie when they think they've like finish the fight, Piccolo is like, all right, Goku, now it's time for you to fight me. Like, we got unfinished business. That's just fun. I like this kind of like before he just is completely a good guy later in Z, where he's like, I guess it benefits me to help out with you, Goku, but like, as soon as we're done here, I'm gonna fight you.
Yeah, which I love that part where they think they've or no, it's before, it's once he's gotten like buff, when Garlic Jr. gets really buff, Goku takes off his like boots and wristbands and like shirt or whatever, and like I think Piccolo takes off his like shoulder pads or whatever. I'm like, oh my god, it's like the ending of every single Yakuza game. They find they're about to kick ass or whatever. They're like, oh, we gotta go all out, more than we ever have before. And I'm like, yeah, let's fucking go. And then they beat them, and then they're like, all right, now it's time for us to fight. I'm like, no. But it's just like Yakuza, because then the villain gets back up.
Exactly. It's like, oh, I guess we can't fight. At some point in there, Kami shows up and fights Garlic, and I wrote in my notes, crying baby versus hydrogen bomb. And then it's like, oh no, Kami is the crying baby, actually, getting his ass beat. I will say one other cool thing about the three goons. They do one of the things I fucking love when a bad guy does in an anime is they pull swords out of their bodies. Like they just got them in there somewhere. they're like oh, you. They're like fighting Piccolo and Goku, and they're like, oh, you know, you think we're fighting, but have you seen the sixth sword I can pull out of my own back? Love that shit. And then Piccolo, like, fucking laser beam snipes a dude. It's sick.
I'm just now finding out that the voice for Jinja is Troy Baker in the Funimation dub.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's fun. Troy Baker, who is, what's his ridiculous name in Death Stranding?
Higgs
Moynihan. Face Off Man. Oh, that's not a ridiculous name, actually.
Well, he names himself after the Higgs boson particle.
Oh, okay. But I thought he had, like, a fun name, you know, like... Michael Bayman or
no, I mean, might be thinking of Die Hard Man or Dead
well, I know
Man.
Yeah, I know that all those guys are like Peace Walker, like we're playing right now, hot cold man, but no, just Higgs Bozo or whatever his name is.
Higgs Moynihan, pounding desk. Now he's the Joker or the Crow or whatever he is doing.
Oh, yeah,
Death Stranding too.
Sure. Yeah, and then Garlic Jr. gets swole and they fight some more, and Goku and Piccolo team up, but he's too strong. And then he's like, oh, if I'm just gonna open a portal into the void. And then drunk Gohan shows up and like exerts just enough energy to kind of like, I don't know, like
knock him off balance.
Yeah, exactly. I was so ready for like, all right, it's time for Gohan to turn like big monkey mode. And then he doesn't. Gotta watch the anime for that, I guess. But yeah, then gets sucked into the dead zone,
which we get like a little, like, I think it's right before the credits, we get like a cut to him like in the glass of the dead zone trying to pound to get out, kind of thing. Rip. Well, I guess he does get out, so.
Yeah, well, then you get like as if it wasn't already obvious enough, like the irony of the situation of, you know, like, oh, you ask for immortality, but be careful what you wish for. You've literally got like Kami doing like voiceover narration, be like, ah, how ironic that this happened to Garlic Jr.
I bet he wishes he didn't get that. Oh,
yep. In a way that I didn't check the Japanese track, but it felt like, is this like only in the English version? Did they go, oh, English people are stupid, we've gotta have Kami narrate the moral of the movie or whatever. I do appreciate though that like basically Gohan wins out the day through the power of just like desperately wanting your dad to take you home. He's like, I'm fucking drunk, I'm tired, I want you to take me home, dad, I miss mom.
He becomes Chi-Chi angry.
Yeah. And that's it. Solid, like, you know, simple little movie. None of the Dragon Ball movies are very long, though this is like the shortest by far, but I think like looking at my files, the longest Dragon Ball Z movie is the Broly movie, the first one, which is 1 hour and 12 minutes, so still not very long.
Hell yeah.
Important note, or important like time that I kept track of, the time to Kamehameha, 26 Ooh. minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty early. I feel like he does it against one of the goons.
Yeah, and then I can't remember. So every time you use the Dragon Ball, they get like sent to all over the world or whatever. But then there's the Black Dragon Balls in GT that like go across the universe. And if you don't get all of them, the world blows up or something.
That's like a GT only thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to think if there are other Dragon Balls.
Like the Namekian ones.
Oh yeah,
there's than the Earth ones.
Yeah. There's Dragon Balls on Namek. In the Frieza saga, they're like big Dragon Balls.
Big boss.
Yeah. But yeah, It was a good, solid movie. Made me want to watch more Dragon Ball stuff because it's been a minute.
Yeah, I don't know that I feel the need to watch anymore. If I do, it would be the Kai version.
But not GT.
Or maybe GT, like, you know.
Dragon Ball Gran Turismo.
And I would look up, like, what episodes are filler or whatever, but...
That's all filler.
Well, I guess,
it's
yeah.
not.
It's not canon anymore, yeah.
Well, there's no manga that's based off of. That's all, like, original to that show.
Right. But I don't know. I really enjoyed my time with it, but I don't necessarily feel like I would get a lot out of watching, you know, 50 episodes of it.
Mm. Yeah, it didn't fill me with the desire to rewatch any of the longer stuff, but I think I might try to watch more of the movies. I actually think I might watch the 4 original Dragon Ball movies. Those are also all similarly short, and seeing that the same director did the first two and quickly reading the plot synopses of those, I was like, oh, I think this would scratch the itch I'm looking for, and maybe I'll watch more after that, but we'll see. But I have all those downloaded when I downloaded this movie, so maybe
I would watch a movie. I wouldn't watch a series, I guess I would say that. Yeah.
What about you, Danielle? Did this whet your appetite for more Dragon Ball?
I mean, it's been on the radar of something I should go back to at some point. It didn't really change much about it. Would be down to watch more of the movies with y'all as like a group watch thing. That would be fun. But
definitely, I want to say I can check real quick that on our list of movies I might have Dead Zone already on. Yep, I do have Dead Zone already on our list of movies.
Go throw the second one on.
So that's been on there for a while. Yeah, which is World's Strongest.
Mm-hmm. There's also one
Learn All About Cooler.
So do we watch the one previous or the next one first?
Oh, you mean the previous one would be the Dragon Ball movie.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, this was the first Z movie. Got a couple of voice actors. I didn't do like a ton of voice actor research for this, but there were a few notable ones that was like, well, these are easy enough to mention. Obviously, Goku, voiced by Masako Nozawa. Do y'all remember the other show we've watched that she voiced a character in? This was a while ago, and it was like
Flying Witch or something like she like voiced the cat in that or something.
No, but it's always stood out in my mind as like, wow, I can't believe that was fucking Goku. She voices Obaba, who's the old lady that runs the table tennis like house in Ping Pong.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah. And then the only other role of hers I noted down just to. Because it would mean something to all of us, is she's Gilmon in Digimon Tamers.
Nice.
Which we love our special little boy. And then Piccolo in Japanese is voiced by Toshio Furukawa, who we've covered twice before. Twice before, and has been in 3 things we watched. One of was before I was covering voice actors, so he was Kai Shiden in the Mobile Suit Gundam movies. First thing we watched with him that I called him out for, he was Eugene in Big O. Do y'all remember who Eugene was?
Is that the, no, is that the cop?
No, he's in a single episode, so you're forgiven for not remembering. He's the evil lawyer? Scientist oh. in the episode where he's doing like the animal experiments.
Oh, okay.
With yeah. Perro. And then also Ukulele Man in that one not great episode of Space Dandy.
Oh, yeah.
And then, as you mentioned before, in the Funimation dub, Piccolo is voiced by Christopher Sabat, who is also Vegeta in Dragon Ball. But we covered him in something recently. Do you remember what he was in?
Something we recently did?
Very recently.
I'm trying to think of like everything we've just watched recently. Yeah. I can't remember.
He's
Kristoff.
Yes,
he wants to come.
Yes, he's yeah. Christoph Giacometti in Yuri on Ice, which is my platform to say fucking RIP to Yuri on Ice the movie. I can't believe we fucking jinxed it.
Yeah.
Gonna be like,
yeah, it's like, what are you saying, fake fans, about me not remembering who voiced
that was the joke. Yeah, I thought that would would clue one of you into it. But yeah, if you didn't hear, they canceled that movie, the Yuri on Ice movie, which saw some people being like, yeah, whatever, who cares, which fair enough. But that movie's been in production for so long, it just sucks to think about like all the work they put into that for it to just not get finished. I was reminded recently of like very different thing, but also just kind of sucks that this kind of thing happens to big creative projects, of the Looney Tunes movie that they scrapped recently, the like Wile E. Coyote versus Acme movie. That was like, if not 100% finished, like 95% finished in post-production, and by all accounts is like one of the best Looney Tunes movies they've ever produced, and they just fucking wrote it off as a tax write-off and said, we're never going to release this. And that kind of shit just sucks. So big RIP for that. But yes, same guy that voices Piccolo and Vegeta is the guy that is coming on ice and
coming on ice several times.
Yes. And then Nikki, one of Garlic Jr.'s three goons, is voiced by my boy Shigeru Chiba, who we just covered as the post-apocalyptic man in Mochi. And was also Garbage Collector A in Ghost in the Shell. So I thought that was funny to see him show up. This is the thing about him, is he is one of those guys that is just always voicing random dudes in like random episodes of Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball movies and stuff like that. Like if you look up the Dragon Ball list of Dragon Ball characters he's voiced, it's like dozens and dozens and dozens, because he's just like, you know, on call to be these random one-off guys that don't matter because he's good at it. But fun to see him. But so then, in addition to the Dragon Ball movie, I guess we all did watch, I have the full title here, Mobile Cop G-Bon, Great Explosion at the Monster Factory of Fear.
Oh my god.
Great title. What did we make of Mobile Cop G-Bon, Great Explosion at the Monster Factory of Fear?
Yeah, that one fucking ruled.
Yeah!
I kept forgetting it wasn't Jan Person, so I was just like, wait, when's he going to throw the JP car? And I was like, wait, no, different guy. Yeah, no, fucking G-Bon as a baseline whips, so having like the movie money is even better.
Yeah, I feel like it worked out perfectly that the three of us a couple months back for Christmas watched a handful of Christmas-themed, Christmas-adjacent tokusatsu episodes, and one of them was the G-Bon vaguely Christmas-related episode, so you got a sense for G-Bon, but it's kind of just like an episode of any other, or most other Metal Hero shows. The thing with G-Bon is, like, he's, like, explicitly modeled after RoboCop. G-Bon is like, what if RoboCop, but cops were good, without any of the, you know, like Verhoeven satire and stuff associated with RoboCop. And then, like, the whole thing is literally, like, G-Bon is a show with a literal monster of the week, and that every week there is a brand new, like, monster guy that the evil villain has concocted. This one has many monsters because it's the movie, you gotta crank it up, hence the Monster Factory of Fear.
I didn't think about, like, oh, like, it's a movie, they're going to have higher production quality or whatever. Because I was like, god damn, there's a lot of monsters in this fucking movie. They were pulling out all the stops. It wasn't until you mentioned, like, oh, yeah, they have movie money. I was like, oh, that's why it's so many fucking monsters. It, like, oh, my god, there's Mad Garbo, there's Bat Block, Ammonite Block, Spider Block, the Great Gibbonoid.
Yes, which is like the three blocks fuse together into a giant monster egg and then hatches into like this insane puppeted dragon. This is where you can tell, like, oh yeah, they really cranked up the budget as opposed to like a normal episode of G-Bon, because that dragon's got like at least three people puppeting it to make that thing move.
There's a horse.
There is a horse, yeah, because like the evil guy, in order to do his monster experiment, steals a bunch of stuff, like a horse and some monkeys and some children.
I have a list. He's going to grind up an award-winning thoroughbred, a monkey, a couple of dogs, some cats, diamonds, uranium, and kit children, all ground up to make the perfect monster.
The kittens, by the way, who can clearly like fit through the bars of the cage that they're they're in.
Yes.
And the footage they use is clearly like a second away from that literally happening. And they're like, okay, quick, cut to the horse.
There's a part where like G-Bon's like, oh, I'm gonna go back and save the animals, which I was like, good for you, G-Bon.
And he doesn't get the cats.
They've already escaped. But if you look, there's a shot where he's getting the monkey, and you can tell the monkey looks up and he's like, what the fuck is that? Oh, I love, like you said, like, you know, this is a universe where cops are good, and like the only way they can do that is just having literal monsters be the enemies. Yeah. And having G-Bon just be a good guy, like, oh, I'm gonna get those horse, I'm gonna free the horse.
It needs to be said how amazing the like drip feed into like downpour of monsters is in this movie, because you start with like the Bat Block, and then you get Ammonite Block, and then Spider Block, and then they mold into the Great Gibbonoid. They fusion summon into that. And me watching this movie is like the Vince McMahon meme, where he's just getting more and more excited. It's like more monsters are being introduced.
Well, and then they think that they've gotten rid of them. They're all running away, but then one of the little kids is like, oh, my back feels heavy, and she has like a spider egg on her back. Yes. And it's like, oh my god, spider block is back. Oh god, and so many people could just get thrown through walls. There's so much wire work.
Mm-hmm.
There's two ladies with like cunty fingernails that like turn into big alien monsters or whatever. There's a lot of wire work with them. It's so good. Yep. The OP is amazing, where it's just like, I'm questioning my reason to live and shit.
Jiba! Jiba! It's like, I've had, since I watched these a couple days ago, I've had a combination of Chala Hedchala and the Jibon theme stuck in my head. Just those going on repeat. I like when Jibon mud wrestles the Ammonite block in, like, they're in, like, I also just rewatched this, so this was fresh in mind. They're in, like, what looks like Poison Ivy's lair from the Joel Schumacher Batman and Robin movie, and they're, like, fighting in the moat.
The walls are, like, undulating. It reminded me a lot of, like, the Legends of the Hidden Temple, like game show or whatever.
Yep.
But thank God Jibon brings in the Daedalus and blasts the giant Gibanoid.
Yep, he's got a BFG. Mm-hmm. That just like comes down from the heavens. It's like time to use this to smite the bad guy. And then you get a great big miniature explosion at the end, which is amazing.
We get the betrayal of Mayumi. It's like, oh, she thought that she lost her memory, which the way they show that is her jumping off a waterfall.
Yes.
And then she's like, oh, Jibon, help me. But it wasn't her. It was Spider Block all along. But then he goes through his programming, which is like, one, if you're a Bolion, Biolon person, I can fucking blast you to see number one or whatever. Like, I can, without a warrant, I can arrest you and dispense my own justice. It's like, cool.
Yeah, again, very RoboCop of just like, I've got a license to do fuck all because you're a Biolon.
And then what's her, the lady, Yoko, I think her name is.
Mm-hmm.
She
or Yuko.
Yuko, yeah. She like shits on who is actually Jibon, the officer Jibon, because he always shows up late to the scene. Because this is, I guess, before they realize that he's Jibon, if they ever do realize that.
I don't know. I haven't seen all of Jibon, so I don't know if that's ever.
I know you'd mentioned in Jan Person they like eventually find out who Jan Person is, but I guess I'm just conflating the two.
Yeah. And sometimes these Metal Hero shows, it's like, oh yeah, no, we know who the guy is. Like, that's the guy. That's him. He transforms, he turns into the guy.
What was the one where you watched recently that had like the main character die? Like a Toku show that like the main character died?
Toku show where the main character died.
Yeah, and maybe there was like the guy was like a dog or something, or like a sheriff dog sheriff.
Oh, I didn't watch this recently, but the Robotech, which is maybe. Like the final Metal Hero show they ever produced. The final episode is literally called like
the death of Robotech,
the death of Robotech or something like that. It's called Robotech's Death at Sea.
Oh my god! Nice.
Also, Metal Hero series Death at Sea, apparently. We've done some movies since then, but yeah, that was the last ever Metal Hero series. Metal Hero did not survive the 90s. I do like, I think it's when he shouts, or no, it's when he does his big sword attack. The fan subs put this on screen where he goes, G-Bod, end! Which is very good. He's got like a sword, he does a hyper beam, he's got his BFG, lots of great arsenals in the G-Bon weaponry.
Oh yeah, I made a few notes. G-Bon hyper beam... the Jibon Haken crash just does so much. I love that his car is like, oh, I heard a young woman screaming 20 kilometers ahead or whatever. It's like, oh shit, I gotta go.
I like that the like disposable like villains in this, just like the random like guys, like the henchmen, just have straight up guns. Like they're just firing like AKs. Oh, yeah. At Jibon. You don't get that in Toku shows anymore. There's just dudes with guns. You also don't get enough like Jibon's like throwing guys through fake walls in this, just like clearly just like big plaster walls to throw guys through. But yeah, highly recommend this one. And I think I said it way at the top, but very important to note, this was even shorter than Dead Zone. This one's like the length of a normal episode of television. It's like 24 minutes long. This is what made me think of like, okay, what fucking order did they show these movies in? Because I feel like if they started with this, I'd be like, well, fuck it. I'm going home. I got my fill. I don't need to stick around for Akuma-kun, whatever his deal is.
See, I would say either start with this or Dragon Ball. So that, like, if you start with this, I'm hype. Like, ooh, what's next? And it's Dragon Ball. Ooh, I'm so hype. And then Akuma-kun and Akko, it's like, oh. If those started, I wouldn't show up until later.
I would have fallen asleep in Akuma-kun and then maybe missed Jiban if they had showed it in that order.
I would have waited 35 years to watch it in my home and discuss it on a podcast.
Same. Yeah, this was the at-home Toei manga matsuri festivals, the ideal manga matsuri. So yeah, what did y'all make of the other two real quick? I guess we can start with, we'll start with the Akko-chan movie, which I enjoyed. Also very short, also like the length of an episode. Basically just an episode of Himitsu no Akko-chan, which like her whole deal is she has a pocket mirror that lets her transform into anything. And she goes on fun little kid adventures with her friends. And in this one, like she's visiting like her grandparents on like an island village. And they tell her and all of her friends about like the legend of a white dolphin that lives over on the small uninhabited island opposite them. And that nobody goes there because they respect the dolphin that protects the island. And if you mess with it, it turns into a white dragon. And so you get the obvious payoff at the end of like Akko-chan pretends to be the white dragon to scare off a bunch of boys who think it'd be fun to poach a dolphin, basically. They're like, it's like, oh man, a white dolphin. That's so cool. I bet everybody would love us if we kidnapped it and showed it off at the summer festival. And it's like, my dude, they're doing the summer festival in honor of the dolphin. They're going to be pissed as hell at you if you show up with the corpse of a dolphin.
Have you seen Midsummer? This doesn't end well.
Mm.
So funnily enough, I didn't take any notes for this movie.
Me neither.
I actually watched the other Akko-chan movie first.
Oh my god.
Because I didn't know which one we were supposed to watch. So that one was very funny because like she turns into a cat at one point. And I was like, I didn't know that's something she could do. So I'm just like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that until later that like she can transform into whatever she wants.
You didn't pay attention during the OP where they literally explain this?
I don't think I've ever watched an OP for this series, but other than like I watch them once, then I move on with my life, but not for these ones. But so the first movie I watched that I paid a little more attention to was they all play in like a vacant lot behind this one kid's house, but then like the kid's parents or dad wants to make like a apartment building there, and they're trying to get him to not do that. It's a fine movie. It's whatever. It's a very like Saturday morning cartoon, like, oh, all I need to do is make my father see my point of view or whatever, and my father's not a bad guy, like, once he remembers what he was like as a child, then everything will be fine, whatever. The second movie, the one you just described, similarly. Well, no, I was going to say similar, like, oh, once they realize the errors of their ways. The boys don't realize an error of their ways because they're, like, trying to poach a dolphin. They just get scared off by it. It is kind of funny. They don't really get a comeuppance. Like, they don't get back home and someone's like, hey, what the fuck did you just try to do? But, I don't know. I can't be too mad about it. It was short. It was cute. It was a cute movie. If I was a kid, I'd like it. I could see this being, like, not to, like, play too much into, like, you know, sex or gender roles or whatever, but, like, oh, let's bring the kids to the Toei Film Festival. You gotta have something for the girls and something for the boys or something. Like, like, that's the feeling I get of this kind of, like, especially when you compare it to, like, fucking Dragon Ball. It's like, oh, okay, like, that's very, two very different demographics, which is fine. They're both well made.
I thought this one was fine. I like Akko-chan herself. I really did not like the supporting cast. I don't love when comedies like are so driven by like a supporting cast being super fucking annoying, especially like the small little blabbermouth girl.
She sucks. One is
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got like shitty little friend who sucks. Totally normal girl who I don't even remember her name, and then a bunch of shitty boys, which I don't mind the boys being shitty because that's the whole point of the thing.
It's like that, oh, if me and my friends met E.T., we'd fucking kill him with hammers, but it's like a local god.
Yeah.
They're like, let's go kill him with hammers.
Which I love that the dolphin's just like, oh, no, it's just, like, safer there for me when it storms. I just like hanging out there when it storms. It's like, oh, okay.
That's my favorite part when, like, Akko-chan transforms into a white dolphin and then gets to just, like, talk with the white dolphin. I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't realize you can, like, learn dolphin language when you turn into a dolphin.
But oh shit, I had a point about the shitty kids.
Are they more or less shitty in the first movie?
In the first movie they're all cool. Like they're all like trying to stop like the dad from, you know, they have like kid arguments like, oh, I want to play basketball or baseball, I want to play soccer, whatever. I want to play gate ball, which I don't know what the fuck, I guess croquet. They're all like making a unified front about wanting to like stop the construction, like the big guy, Taisho, goes on like a hunger strike camping out the construction area kind of thing. Oh, I just remember what the thing I was going to mention because it had to do with that. Then Akko-chan turns into a busty blonde woman to cheerlead them down the road to like stop the construction.
Okay.
So that's a thing that happens also. Comes a stacked blonde, but
it's not as cool as when she turns into a seagull in the second movie. Which I guess if you had watched the second movie first, that would have been the first thing she transformed into. So that would have been your moment and be like, wait a minute, she can do that.
Yeah,
she
wait
can
a
become
minute.
A seagull.
It's like the Wonder Twins, except she can turn into anything, but it makes me think of the Wonder Twins where it's like one of them can turn into like any animal and then the other one can turn into any form of water, specifically like a bucket.
God, imagine being the guy that came up with that. You've got this really cool idea. What if someone could turn into any form of water? It's like, I can list three forms of water, my guy. You gotta come back to the drawing board with a better idea.
Well, it's like she never does anything like too wild with it. Like if I could be any form of water, I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna become the ocean and just drown this motherfucker. Kind of like how like Storm can just like conjure like any sort of like weather conditions and just like strike a toad with lightning and make a really bad one-liner. Like that's the shit I would do if I could make any form of water, not become a bucket, because I think that's literally what she always becomes. She becomes a bucket that the other guy carries her to like dump onto something.
Right. But yeah, I thought the Akko-chan one was cool. I didn't watch the first movie, but I had a good enough time with the second one that I was like, oh, I have both of these downloaded, maybe I'll watch the first one. But I did not yet. And then you get to the Akamakun movie, which is like Dead Zone in that it's 40 minutes long, yet somehow way too long.
Jesus Christ, this one feels so fucking long.
Yeah.
And this was the first one I watched out of the three non-Dragon Ball ones, and that was the wrong fucking decision. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I watched this one last. I watched like the first three, and then I braked to eat dinner, and then I came back after dinner to watch this one, and because I had like a full stomach, I was struggling to stay awake. I was like, oh no, it's Akamakun time, wait, no, it's nap time.
God, I kind of hated this. It just felt like nonsense kept happening.
You don't like the Sphinx's riddle, this time not being used for 9/11, but this time being used for whatever the fuck Satan was doing. I don't know what the fuck he was
That's
doing.
The most wild part of this movie. It's like, they dump so much information on you where it's like, all right, so the Sphinx is like a conduit for souls to go to the afterlife, and Satan has stolen the Sphinx and put it on his demon arc for reasons.
The eight sages have his little ocarina or Solomon's flute or whatever. I don't know.
Hey, it's his 12 disciples because he's like demon Jesus. Because once every 10,000 years, a child prodigy is born who will usher in a new age of humanity or something. That's like the lore of Akamakun.
Yeah, it's just very funny thinking about how this, like, there's probably parallels you can make to, like, from this show to Monster Musume and, like, other, like, oh, I gotta take care of all these monsters shows.
What?
I'm not following your logic there.
Well, like,
they both do have monsters in there.
Comparison to
isn't Akuma, like, taking, like, trying to adjust these monsters into everyday life or some shit? For the record, I skimmed this movie, so like I could be completely wrong on this.
I guess like, that is his vibe. Like they're going to school. I do like the one little monster that's like a little kid, but he's got like 1,000 eyes.
Yeah.
And he's scaly. He's like a little frogman.
Hachine, I think is the name is.
I think his name literally means like 100 eyes.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like, Hyakune. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, no, I mean, like, just that sort of like, oh, we have monsters in everyday life, and we gotta like tame them, or not tame them, but like you could teach them how to be like productive members of society or whatever, and that, and like Monster Musume and other like shit shows like that. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. Again, I've skimmed this movie, but also important note, we at Under the Kotatsu would like to apologize to the Wonder Twins for not being understanding of your game. I've just now found out that the Wonder Twin is the one that can turn into water. I thought it was the girl. But at one point, he turned into a 5,000-foot humanoid giant, ice giant. However, taking away all rep by, he also turns into liquid nitrogen at one point, which is not, that's not water. That's not ice.
That is, it's in the name.
It's in the name. It's a different thing. So just because it's really cold doesn't mean it's ice.
But it's very funny.
Anyway, back to Akuma. yeah, I mean, this is, it's funny. It's like a beach episode for a series that you haven't seen yet.
Well, it's a beach episode for the first 5 minutes.
Again, I skimmed this movie.
I'm so bad about it, too. Yeah. It's like, wow, isn't this all relatable? And then you go to, like, the fucking void hell zone, and there's the Sphinx and Satan, and I was fighting for humanity's soul.
But first, we've got to figure out how to make this castle fly, baby.
I skimmed ahead and there were like 8 sages and they're like, you and all your demons are fucking up our paradise. They... Get out of here.
I'm not going to lie. You fucking picked the right thing of watching another Akko-chan movie instead of this.
Definitely. I think I would have liked, I didn't have a bad time with this one. It's just like too long and I didn't know enough about Akuma-kun, but I feel like if this one were the length of the Jibon movie or the Akko-chan movie, it would have been like perfect because it'd just be like every 30 seconds, some wild shit would be happening. But when it's like spread out over like 45 minutes, it's like, all right, this has gone on for too long.
The fact that this is just as long as the Dragon Ball Z movie is fucking me up.
Yeah, and Piccolo's not even in it.
Mm-hmm. A green guy is, though.
That's true. I did. That was the highlight of the movie. I love that little green guy with his eyeballs.
Is Akuma-kun done by Toriyama? This is the one that most felt like Toriyama, like in the art style.
No.
Okay.
No, Akuma-kun is the, I'll look it up. The guy Shigeru Mizuki.
Lost his arm.
Yeah. Lost his arm. He was like, his whole unit died and he was like asked to like kill himself and he was like, no, I will not. And then he was like in a hospital in like New Guinea and one of the locals was like, abandon Japan. You can marry one of us. And he was like, oh, I would love to, but I've got to go home to my family or some shit. It's like, dude lived a wild life in a very short period of time. And then he made a bunch of like influential manga.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of skipping his Wikipedia now, and yeah, like, holy shit. And there's a lot of stuff in there about like him, you know, either like listening to ghost stories or like having kind of paranormal experiences as he was in the hospital and stuff like that, and I guess that influencing his work, which is really cool.
Yeah, very like anti-war pacifist. Like you can see where Akuma-kun comes from, because Akuma-kun's whole thing is like, I want to like build a world where humans and demons can get along and understand each other, and it's like, okay, like you can kind of see where he's coming from, but sometimes you just got to smite the literal Lord Satan and befriend the Great Sphinx in order to make that happen.
Yeah. Also, Shigeru Mizuki also passed away 8 years ago, age 93, so rest in peace to him as well. But he made a manga called Hitler.
I saw that. Yeah,
which I assume obviously not like is negative like, on the man.
Yeah.
It's like biographical and character. It characterizes that version of Hitler as dopey, sad, and often pathetic. Lamau, get his ass.
Yeah, I feel like the guy who refused to kill himself in the name of the Empire of Japan wouldn't be the guy to write a manga that's like, and you know who was really cool? Hitler.
In the work, Hitler, quote, looks distraught even when he's whistling with pleasure, suggesting that it's impossible for the man to be truly happy when his life is fueled by hate. Like, yeah, get his ass.
And that was the Toei Manga Matsuri film lineup.
Of these, here's a question for the class. Mm-hmm. Of these, so four different series, I guess. Which of these would you feel most compelled to complete the like originating series? Pretend they're all the same length, like ignoring like, oh, one of them's 1,000 episodes. But like if you just had to like go into each, all of them, they're all the same length, whatever. Which of these would you want to continue on?
Dragon Ball.
Interesting.
Obviously, Jibon.
Okay, yeah, mine's like, Jibon as well. Yeah. Dragon Ball's a close second. For me, it's like Jibon, Dragon Ball, probably, maybe Akko and then Akuma, though they're kind of like, I don't know enough about Akuma to like really put any thought towards it. I feel like if I knew that show, the movie might have been better, but again, I skimmed the movie, and from what I saw, I just saw the Sphinx saying to Satan, "You deceived me," and I was like, oh, okay.
I feel like I went into the Akuma-kun movie knowing not a lot about Akuma-kun, and I left the Akuma-kun movie knowing a little bit more, and that's all I need to know. I'm good now. I don't need to know more about him. But like Akko-chan, I would spend more time with. Obviously, would watch more Dragon Ball. I love monsters and metal heroes, so obviously I would watch more Jibon. But Akuma-kun is the one that I like wouldn't really seek out more of.
Apparently, Akuma-kun got a ONA series recently.
Yeah, they've adapted it like several times.
Netflix release ONA series. Maybe I'll watch the 12 episode ONA series. Who knows?
Yeah, I do want to say that the different Akuma-kun adaptations are all wildly different. Some of them, like, he's a completely different character. Like Akuma-kun's like his nickname, and so in some he's like one little kid, and then in others he's just a completely different guy who's the new Akuma-kun. So maybe some of them are really good. I don't know.
Without looking up, do y'all want to guess what this Akuma-kun's name was? The 1989 one? No, unfortunately okay. Not. It's Shingo Umuregi.
Oh, you mean the one that was in the movie?
Yeah.
They call him Shingo, I think, a few times.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it's just in like they give you. I don't know if this is like at the beginning of every episode of the anime, but they give you like the narration at the beginning that kind of fast tracks you. Like, all right, there's a boy named Shingo, and he's a child prophecy, and that happens every 10,000 years, and now there's demons. All right, let's get into it.
I'm just glad I get to use both Shala, Hedshala, and the Jibon OP in this episode. True.
Yeah. Akko-chan opening kind of cute, but it's no Chala Hedgehog.
Yeah, I'll have to decide if I want to use the Lucky Star version or the original.
All right. Well, this is the part of the show where we talk about other anime that we're watching. On top of all of that, how could one have time? Danny, did you watch anything else besides those?
I didn't watch anything else. I read Look Back by Fujimoto, the Chainsaw Man author. Very good. Really short, like 145 pages, I think. So I got through it in like 10 minutes, I think. One of those things that I kind of want to go back and like really take my time through the art. There's other series that I've read that have a similar kind of vibe and like inciting incidents and stuff like that. That, you know, I don't know. I feel like it could have benefited from being a little bit longer to let, you know, the characters breathe a little more, but at the same time, it gets done what it wants to get done really effectively. So I also picked up a book called Goodbye, Eri, or Emmy, by this.
It's Goodbye, Eri.
Eri.
That one's very good.
So I have that one. I'm going to read that one here probably later today. But other than that, just been playing through Yu-Gi-Oh! Legacy of the Duelist, which is a game that lets you replay every Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel from the series with, like anime-accurate decks. You still have to play within the rules of the game. You can't do whatever the fuck they do in the show. But only once have I had to switch to a user-made deck, because the deck that like I was going against, it was like, oh, if you don't have this one card, you're kind of boned. And I got fed up with it. So I decided to switch to I based it off of the Rare Hunters deck.
Oh.
Which like the game literally describes it as the cheater Exodia deck. Mm-hmm. It is in fact a cheater Exodia deck that basically wins within a turn or two because you just draw nonstop. But
yeah, you just mill your deck until you've got Exodia.
Yeah, but it is incredibly fun to play through the series. I've gotten through the original series, GX, and I'm almost finished with 5Ds. Next, I believe, is Zexal.
That sounds right.
And then...
Is it Arc-V after that?
Arc-V, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that as far as it goes up to?
I think so.
Oh, God, because there's Arc-V... There's sevens. I can't remember what's in between Arc-V and sevens.
So it has... Oh, it's up to Zexal. So I think Arc-V is next, then Zexal.
No, Zexal is the fourth one. I'm looking at the list now. So it would go GX, then 5Ds, then Zexal.
Oh, then Arc-V.
Arc-V, because Arc-V is the fifth one. So V, and then the sixth one is Vrains, VRains, because that's the VR one. And then the seventh one is Sevens. And then the newest one is Go Rush, which is based off of the like Go version of Yu-Gi-Oh, right? Is that what it's called? A Rush? Rush is the like faster version of Yu-Gi-Oh? I don't know. I've not kept up with Yu-Gi-Oh in terms of card game or anime since, well, card game in literally forever. The anime, the last one I watched any of was Zexal, I think. Maybe I watched a bit of Arc V.
I'm just excited to finally learn how like fucking pendulum summoning works and shit like that.
Nobody actually knows. No. Things just happen on the battlefield and we just go, okay, I guess that happened.
Yeah, because I think I got the Link Evolution version, which has like all of the things. Because I think the base game only goes up to one of them, and then the one I have goes up to all of them, because it was like, it's like 90% off or some shit. Anyway, that's what I've been doing. It's a hoot. Having a good time. Love Yu-Gi-Oh! More than life itself.
And then, Danielle, what have you been watching?
Oh, boy. So, new anime season, y'all.
Again? I feel like it's like every other day. Every other episode, it's like a new anime season.
It's four times a year?
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Time flies, huh?
Yeah. So, I'll try to speedrun it. We got Yuru Camp Season 3. I love seeing the girls again. I do not love the new character designs. They woobified them.
Is that the one that Austin dropped? Or is that Yuru... No, that's Kuma Bear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just like a hobby manga about girls camping. It's good. Started the Blue Archive anime. It's literally only point is, wow, the girls from the gacha game are animated now. Cool. It's exactly what you expect. I just think it's a little weird how there's no official English release of that in the US or Europe.
English release of the game or the anime?
The anime.
Is the game available in English?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is the weird part. Like, no one picked it up. Dungeon Meshi and Precure still going. Started Girls Band Cry, a girls band anime that's exclusively 3D CG. I think the animation's a bit iffy at some parts, but the faces look good and the music performances look good, which is enough for me to be here for it, especially because I really love the characters so far. Y'all should know I'm a sucker for girls band anime at this point. I'm watching Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night, anime original about like some creative group together. Enjoying it so far. Looks really fucking nice. There's the two sides of Voice Actor Radio. It's your standard ass light novel adaptation. It's fine. I'm just watching it because it's a Yuri light novel adaptation. Watching the Go-Go Loser Ranger adaptation. It's very fun so far, but I think that one is significantly less popular than I was expecting it to be. I'm honestly like surprised how much that show is using CG in its like fight scenes. I guess we're just kind of reaching that point where we're going to start seeing a lot more of 3D CG in a lot of anime. And speaking of even more 3D CG, I'm watching the fucking High Speed Etoile, the racing anime. It's going to be a fucking train wreck. It's already under a 5.0 on MAL, so you know it's good stuff.
What's so bad about it? Just the production?
The character animation is pretty fucking horrendous. Mm. The racing looks fine, but the character animation's horrendous, and it's just kind of a fucking mess. It's not explaining anything about racing at all.
What's there to explain? You just gotta go fast.
Uh-huh.
Nodding sagely.
Better or worse than Hot Wheels Acceleracers?
That has better character animation.
I mean, that's not saying much.
It's actually worse than IGPX, though. Or is it better?
Oh, like, it's absolutely looks worse and is worse than IGPX.
Yeah, because IGPX is a stone-cold classic.
I'm sitting back here going,
anything else? That was a lot.
No, that's it for this season. I'm not sure how much I'm going to get through everything.
Yeah, Godspeed, if you actually got through all of those shows to completion, that's a lot of anime.
I watch a lot of them like weekly with other people, so it's easy to keep up with them.
And I thought I had a lot more on my list than I normally do, which I do have quite a bit. So where to start? I guess I'll just go in order that I wrote them down. I watched the Tales from Earthsea Ghibli movie and had a...
No, I'm so sorry.
What a weird fucking movie. So much hair, or so much Hay is made about this movie over the years has kind of like a notorious reputation of both being like a subpar Ghibli movie and being like a bad adaptation of the books, and a lot is spilled about Gorō Miyazaki not being ready to take on anime or whatever. I don't really care about that angle of it, but I've been reading through the Earthsea books because they're reading through those on Shell by Genre, great podcast, which is why I watched this movie, because they are covering it for a bonus episode. And I was just like appalled by the lack of like effort in adapting what the books have ups and downs, but mostly I think are very good books, and just no care in taking any of the interesting ideas from those books and putting them on screen. It's called Earthsea, and there's no sea in this movie. It's all earth. There's like one shot of Ged sailing on his boat to like a deserty shore, and then that's all you see of the sea for the rest of the movie. But they did like a weird thing where they, instead of just adapting one of the several books, they adapted elements from four books, plus they took a bunch of ideas from some Hayao Miyazaki manga from the 80s and threw them all in a blender and then threw out all the interesting ideas and just like fully like underutilized certain characters and stuff that show up. And it's just like, if you like those books at all, it's just like depressing to see what they did with it. But I will say all the people that may care about it, like being like, you know, like, oh, it's a subpar Ghibli, like in terms of production or whatever. Like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it's, I don't know. It's, that's what you would normally expect. Like, maybe it would look better if, you know, it was Hayao Miyazaki and not Gorō Miyazaki, but I don't think it's like a bad looking movie. Like, production wise, it's fine. It's just all the adaptation choices. They made a very boring movie out of, even at their worst, I think, very interesting books to think about, but they just didn't put any of those interesting ideas in the movie. So it's just like baffling of like, why was this made? Like, did anybody involved care?
Didn't they make a live action version of this as well?
Yeah, like a few years before the movie, there was a, I think American produced a live action TV series that Le Guin fucking hated. And I think that's what she said. She said a bunch of things about the Ghibli movie, but I think she said like, well, at least it's not as bad as that one was.
Mm.
And also like, so like the other thing about this movie, which Earthsea famously has a lot of non-white characters. Like they're literally described as having like black skin or like, you know, dark brown skin. Like it's very explicit from the jump in that first novel that like, hey, most of the people in this world are non-white. And when they're white, they're very much called out for it. In the Ghibli adaptation, everybody is very white. though, like, not like everybody's like pale white to the degree where, like, if you read Le Guin talking about it, she's like, you know, like, you know, I understand that when I watch it, I go, hey, you whitewash my characters. But when somebody in Japan watches it, they might read the skin tones of the character in a different way that I do. And she's like, I don't think that's like the best excuse, but it's still a better excuse than the American version has, which is they did just cast all white people in that adaptation. But I would only recommend it if you're like, if you've never seen it and you're invested in the novels. I do think it's interesting to consider. It's just not very good. So you just got to like brace yourself for it. So I watched that. I started Nijion season 2. That's the Love Live Nijigasaki kind of like short form CG show of just like the girls hanging out and doing gay shit together. So that's a very easy show to watch. It's literally like 3-minute episodes. So I can fit in a 3-minute episode of that once a week. And it's just as gay as the first season was. So, it's cute. Not a new show, but Pokemon, current season of Pokemon is not on a new story arc and it's very good. It's basically like, hey, our big Final Fantasy airship has to get repaired. So, the kids have to go off to school to learn how to do the, Terastalize maneuver from the newest Pokemon game, which means a bunch of characters from the game are showing up, and it's very fun. Also, the new OP and ED are very good. I was quite disappointed by the second OP that series has. So, worth shouting out. Pokemon very good right now. I also started Yuru Camp season 3, which I'll mention the thing that's relevant to you, Danny, about that show. Snake is in it. Akio Otsuka voices one of the characters' grandfather, who like teaches her about camping as a kid, which is very funny.
And is also the narrator.
And he's also the narrator, and that's extremely funny to me now that I've played Snake Eater. know, it's like, Rin, this is how you eat a snake.
Yes.
Do I need to cook it? No, eat it raw.
How do you feel about the new character designs?
I honestly didn't notice very much. I also saw people complaining about the backgrounds being more egregious in terms of, like, they just, like, took real-life photography and, like, anime filtered it.
Yeah, that fucking
but it's
rules.
Like, didn't they do that in the last two seasons? But no, none of the production seemed...
So many good anime have done that, and, like, so many old visual novels do that. Like, it's fine.
Literally, Bocchi, we were just talking about how they did that for the guitar store. Like,
we totally did that. Fine. We talked about that for, I mean, different bear, but, like, We Know the Devil also used similar techniques. To good effect.
Yeah. To very good effect. What's different about the character designs? I generally didn't notice, other than, like, some have different hair, like, their hair has changed, but I didn't notice anything else different.
Yeah, it's mostly their, like, more typical, like, moe style, like, softer, more childlike looking. I mean, always my favorite character, I think she was hit the hardest. So that's why I'm not too into them.
I'm sure if I watched season two right before season three, I would have noticed, but I generally didn't register for me.
I watched season two only a few months ago, so.
Yeah, no, that show's still very good. Very cozy. Very cozy show.
Funnily enough, by the way, in terms of Akiyotsuka, because I've never played an MGS game with the Japanese track, my biggest reference for Otsuka is he is Adachi in Like a Dragon 7 and 8. He's very good in that. It's funny. In 7, he has, like, such a dad bod. Like, I don't know that you ever see him shirtless, but he's, like, kind of, like, chubby. He's, like, literally, like, oh, I'm a pencil pusher cop. You know, I'm kind of, you know, whatever. I'm just an older guy. And then you see him in 8, and he is, like, fucking a Greek god. It's so funny. And you can put him in, like, a gold Speedo. So it's, like, oh, hell yeah. So check in... I don't know, 2.5 years when we start our new podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Like a Podcast or whatever.
That would be the name for it, 100%.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, God, if you actually drag me to that one, it'll finally get me to fucking play those games.
We'll do that when we run out of anime for this podcast. We'll play Yakuza. Does Adachi from Yakuza seem like the kind of guy that'd be really into camping?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so just imagine him as Rin's grandpa in Eurocamp.
Or would pretend, like, be like, oh, I know all about camping, and then it's like, oh, I'm actually afraid of snakes or something. Like, he would be a big baby about it. Mm. I love Adachi so much.
Like, any character Akio Otsuka voices is bound to be good, except for whoever he voiced in Kanan, but not his fault.
Who did he? Oh, he voiced the, like, mentor guy, right, in that?
Yeah, don't ask me to remember his name.
It's something dumb.
Yeah.
But let me see if I can find a photo of Adachi in his bathing suit. God, he's so fucking hot.
Oh, my God.
This is going to be a thirsting over buff older men.
The juxtaposition of that next to the year we have girls is
exactly
funny.
Yeah, you can't see it listening to this audio podcast, but we've got some comparison pictures of the Eurocamp girls in our chat, followed by... muscular men in Yakuza.
It's like there's like a whole shot of them, like, on the beach together, and I'm just sitting there and I see Adachi. I go, holy shit.
Yeah, it's like one of these is not like the other ones. Amazing. I also started a Go-Go Loser Ranger. I wasn't going to. I was like, whatever. It was like, I would consider it, but trying to watch less seasonal anime these days, so I was like, this one gets the cut. But then I saw that somebody returned to fan subbing after like 4 years of inactivity to sub it, so I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll check out the first episode, because it's cool that they're subbing stuff again. And I've watched 2 episodes now. I'm not really sold on it. I don't find it very funny. Like the premise broadly is cool and entertaining, but I don't feel like the actual, like, moments in the show are all that funny. I do think the premise is interesting, but I'm waiting for it to actually, like, go somewhere. It's very slow out of the gate, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As someone who's current on the manga, it starts pretty slow.
Yeah. I also, like, I don't really care for any of the characters so far, and I want to know more about the shitty rangers that are in it, because they seem like they would be, like, just the most, like, nakedly evil people, but they haven't really, like, you know, shown what any of those characters are actually like when they're, you know, with their mask off, I guess. I also don't, like, the production is very good, but it doesn't scratch the same itch that watching, like, an actual tokusatsu show does for me. I also don't think designs of the Rangers suits are very good. I don't like that you can see the lower half of their actual face. Not a fan of that. But the production is very good. It's like a much better looking show than I was expecting. I don't know how much longer I will stick with it. It needs to really like win me over in another episode or two, or I'll probably drop it. But I am currently still watching that. And the last thing, I did a bunch of kind of SD Gundam mopping up of a few things that I hadn't watched that have been subbed in recent years. So I watched SD Gundam Scramble / Dawn of Papal. I watched Many Things SD Gundam, and I watched SD Gundam Festival. Mostly just more of what you would expect from, you know, the 80s, 90s SD Gundam stuff. But I will say, SD Gundam Festival is broken up into three episodes, or kind of three segments. The second and the third segment are, you know, whatever, they're fine. The first segment is genuinely one of the single best Gundam episodes I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh.
It is amazing. It's like, it's an entire kind of like space opera action sequence between like a few SD Gundams, set to like, there's like a band that follows them around and sings about the anime while it's happening. And it's kind of like a proto like Gurren Lagann, or like, you know, Trigger, kind of like, how can we make this fight scene more ridiculous moment to moment as it's going on kind of stuff. Where it's just like things get blown out of proportion by the end of it, and it does it so much better than I think Gurren Lagann or any of those kinds of things do. And it's clearly like a, oh, I bet this is this particular SD Gundam segment was like very influential on a lot of people that came after it. But it's genuine, and it's like 15 minutes long. It's like one of the best like Gundam things I've ever seen. It's just like, sometimes you watch something and you go, that was so good, I could watch it again like right this second. And if it weren't for the fact that it was like the first of three segments and I still needed to watch the other two, I probably would have literally like rewatched it on the spot. It was that good. Highly recommend it.
I feel like you haven't watched Gundam in a while. I feel like this is like the first time you've mentioned it in a while.
Well, I've been rewatching Gundam 00, or I was rewatching Gundam 00 along with, what do you call it? Great Gundam Project. Mm-hmm. I did this kind of SD Gundam wrap-up one because I've been meaning to, but they're also doing a similar thing on their podcast. There's more SD Gundam stuff that I have watched that they haven't, that they're covering soon, but that was the impetus for doing this. I'm not sure if, for a while, I was going at my own pace, but now I'm kind of like caught up to where they're at in that show. They're about to watch Unicorn, and then they're going to be like where I would be at if I was to watch the next Gundam thing for me, which is technically like SD Gundam Sengokuden, which is like the Three Kingdoms SD Gundam show. And I'm not sure if I want to like keep going at my pace, or at this point just like watch two episodes of Gundam a week for the next like 5 years until they finish, because I did kind of burn myself out on Gundam a little bit. Turns out you can only watch so much of that before wanting to watch other things. But yeah, so watched a bunch of SD Gundam, and I think that's it. I'm still continuing on with some other things that are currently airing that I don't have any updates for. Boom Boonger, still very good, still enjoying that. They've now fleshed out the squad. They've got all five Rangers now. My boy Genba got to Henshin last week, so very excited for him.
It's like going through puberty. Oh, you find the Henshining.
That was a very fun episode. But yeah, well, Danny, it is your pick next time. So tell us, what will we be watching?
It was really funny. Recently on Twitter, one of the things that was going around is like people discussing how much they really like Conan O'Brien. Because apparently from all accounts, I didn't realize this, but I'm not shocked, he's like a genuinely nice guy. Like a lot of his like on off air personality is like the same as his on air personality. He's like a genuinely nice guy. And one of the things that they shared as part of, someone had shared as part of like their thing that they really liked was they had, apparently the art director for the show or something to that effect, a prop master or something, would come on, sit in a recliner and talk through like something that was annoying him. And one of the things that was annoying him was that he had been watching Cowboy Bebop on Toonami and other shows like The Big O, but recently they had changed up the programming, and he named off a few different shows, and I was shocked that he mentioned what I'm gonna pick next. So it kind of like, it was like a strike of lightning, because I was like, oh, like, I mean, I'd already chosen it, but I was like, oh wow, this is like not a show that no one has heard of, and also it's a show that you had mentioned, Austin. Or had guessed, and I didn't know, like, this is like a 1980 87 to 91 show. It's 8 episodes, and it is called Bubblegum Crisis.
Yay.
Because I had searched for City Hunter. All right. So a mutual on Twitter had posted like the City Hunter OP, and I was like, oh, that seems cool as fuck. So I was like, oh, maybe we'll choose that for the podcast. It's like 50 something episodes, way too long. So I looked for similar shows. Like I searched like, oh, what are shows that are similar to it and vibe? And this is one that came up. There's another one called the Gunsmith Cats, where the review is like, girls and guns, what else do you need? Yeah. But this...
We've got to get something. Got to watch one of those shows to get Kanan out of the taste of Kanan. Yeah,
exactly. So this one is a different girls and gun show, though it's also a, it's like a mecha show. So
it's more of a exoskeleton mm-hmm. show.
Powered suit.
Yeah.
Show.
Like Fallout.
Like Fallout. But yeah, it's a show set in the now near future, I guess, and follows a bunch of gals who are trying to take down mechanical beasts known as the Boomers.
Oh my god, so wrong.
Oh my god, yeah, I know, so topical. Is COVID also in this? Yeah, so I'm excited. I don't, again, like I said, I don't know much about it. I think you had mentioned when you were talking, like you were guessing, like, oh, Gunsmith Cats, you know, whatever else. You had mentioned a common thread between them, I guess the either studio or director, AIC or Art Medic or something.
No, the connection was, so you had given me some clues, and my guesses were Gunsmith Cats, because especially because I knew you talked about that recently, and then the other guess was Riding Bean, and I was specifically guessing OVAs released by North American anime distributor Animego, recently got bought by what's his name from Discotheque, Justin Savakis. And this was the only one that I didn't name of that ilk. But Animego has released this on Blu-ray. I just recently got it on Blu-ray to watch for these upcoming podcast episodes. But yeah, that's the through line. But I've never seen it. This is kind of like I feel like our generation has Cowboy Bebop. Bubblegum Crisis is like the English anime fan. A generation before us is like Cowboy Bebop in terms of like, this was the coolest shit ever when you watched it at like 13 years old or whatever.
I am hoping it holds up better.
But that's exciting. And it's 8 episodes. They're like, they vary in length. I can't remember what we decided. How are we going to break these up for the podcast?
So the first 4 episodes are 26 to 45 minutes, and then 5 through 8 are 43 through 52. So it's pretty much an even split. So I think we can just do straight down the middle, 4 and 4.
Okay. I am down with that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for this, which I love. And the first line under the legacy section gives me pause. Masaki Kajishima and Hiroki Hayashi both worked on Bubblegum Crisis OVAs. They both cite the show as being the inspiration for their harem series, Tenchi Mio Ryo Oki.
Mm.
So
I didn't know that. This show shared lineage with that, but that is that's interesting to know going into it.
Yeah. So, oh wow, they thought it. Hiroki Hashi thought it would be a fun show, or it would be fun to create some comedy episodes with ideas like the girls going to hot springs, but it was rejected by the sponsors. oh, I'm not one normally to side with the sponsors. But
these sponsors aren't ready for it, but their kids their sponsors' kids are. Gonna be ready for it.
Mm. Also, unrelated to that, I just thought of a thing I saw on Twitter that was like, MAPPA lost its soul when it stopped making TQ. I thought about sending it. I was like, oh, as the resident TQ stan.
Yeah, so true, man. Yeah, if they were still making TQ or TQ, they wouldn't have canceled the Uriah and Ice movie. We're just living in the bad MAPPA timeline.
Mm.
I still need to pick that for the podcast somehow at some point. We're just going to watch all 8 seasons of Take You and the spinoff shows. It's fine. They're like,
oh,
like
2-minute
episodes. Yeah, I was going to say, right?
One episode per season. We can do it. All right. Well, until next time, you can follow the podcast on Twitter or co-host at Under the Kotatsu. You can find slightly referenced Metal Gear podcast that me and Danny do called Grind My Metal Gears. Also on Twitter at GrindMyMGS and on co-host at GMMG. We are currently playing through Peace Walker, which is a hoot. And you can find me on co-host at Chai, posting screenshots from Pokemon or Tokusatsu. Danny, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at CoverMeInSauce, or just on any of the other podcast things. Just a quick reminder, please rate our podcast on whichever platform that you are watching them on. It's always neat to kind of check the listener's user interface and seeing like, oh, I think we have like 4.5 stars here, and then, you know, 4 point something on the GMMG. It always brings a smile to my face. So if you wanna see or hear or feel my smiling face, as if I was Goku sending my spirit energy to you for your spirit bomb, give us a rating. 5 stars appreciated. But you know, if you wanna have a lower thing, just please leave a comment so we can fix it or kind of think about what we want to do with it.
And Danielle, where can people find you?
I am Yuri Bunny on Blue Sky and Tumblr.
Alrighty. Well, until next time, Danielle, why don't you take us out of here?
Be crimes, do gay, and children's anime don't need to have the most annoying characters of all time. I'm sure you can write around them. Please.
Just put a Piccolo in there instead. It's that simple.
Anytime you want to make an annoying character, just draw Piccolo.
Just draw Piccolo.